The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
Good morning. Good morning,
Pat. Good to see you in studio. Been a while.
It's good to be back. I've been back a while now. First of all, reaction to the budget. You must be pretty gratified at the criticism, which is almost begrudging.
I don't know if I'd say that. We've seen different responses from different people. It is a budget that is all about the cost of living crisis. It's about putting money back in people's pockets, reducing taxes, increasing pensions and some welfare payments. It's about reducing some of the very high costs that people have to pay, whether it's childcare or putting a kid through school or college or public transport. And while it is a very big budget package, 11 billion euros, it is against the backdrop of very high inflation and very, very, very much rising household bills for people. So, you know, I'm conscious that people are really struggling with those bills, and this is designed to help in some way.
Now, you will be accused on one side of producing a populist budget. In other words, buying what might be prospective votes. What do you say to that charge?
Well, first of all, we're a long way from an election, so I don't think this has anything at all to do with
that. No, but you look at the polls.
Polls aren't votes, as you know. No, but what this is exactly what it says on the tin. We're facing an inflation crisis. A lot of people are really struggling to make ends meet. You know, even people on good incomes on paper are really seeing these bills hit, particularly energy bills. And this is designed to help to cushion the blow, to protect household incomes and living standards, and also to help businesses with energy costs so that they can get through the winter and hang on to their staff.
Now, one of the Sinn Féin TDs, Mairead Farrell, has suggested that you've stolen Sinn Féin clothes. What do you say to that? In other words, a lot of the things that you put into the budget were things that they were demanding.
Well, I didn't hear her say that.
I think she said it earlier on Morning Ireland, or words to that effect.
Hopefully they'll then vote for the budget. They weren't voting for it last night anyway. They vote against a number of resolutions. So hopefully that's a sign that they'll be supporting the budget.
Now, the one area where people were maybe looking for a bit more help, and this is in terms of energy bills, the idea of a price cap. Why did the government set its face against a price cap?
It's something we're nervous about. What we have done is the energy credits, so 200 euros off the next three bills, essentially, before Christmas and after Christmas. And that, I think, will help a lot of people with their energy costs. And then, obviously, a special scheme for energy, for electricity and gas, for small business in particular. The difficulty with the price cap is we can't cost it. If you agree a price cap, essentially, the government says that we'll pay the amount above that, no matter what it is. So you can't cost it. It is essentially a contract for difference. Remember what brought down Anglo-Irish Bank, bank guarantee, all of that. And you're saying, you know,
so the energy companies could charge what they like. I mean, the price cap would be presumably per kilowatt hour or per therm if it's gas. And that's where the cap would be. So people would still pay proportionately according to their use. But the companies could charge what they liked. Is that the reservation?
That's the concern. Not possible to cost, and would essentially be a blank check for energy companies, many of which aren't even here in the state. You know, bear in mind, most of our gas, all of our oil is exported. So it's not as if we could even recover all of it from a windfall tax. So it would be a blank check to energy companies, most of which aren't based in the state. Mm-hmm. And that's the concern we have now. You know, I'm in government a while now. I've been involved in leading the country through austerity and out again, through Brexit, through the pandemic. I'm always afraid to rule things out because sometimes you do end up doing things that you never thought you would do. But that's the concern that we have. And, you know, it is an approach. There are some European countries doing it, but what they're actually doing is they're only doing a price cap to a point. You know, you get a certain number of units up to
was that an approach that you looked at?
We certainly examined the issue of a price cap, but we thought the best thing to do is to give people that 200 euro credit off their next three bills.
Now, you mentioned windfall taxes for those energy companies who didn't have any effect from Russian gas or Russian activities. In other words, if you're generating in wind, your infrastructure is there. If the wind blows, you generate power. Yeah. But yet, because of the way the markets work, there is a price that is set. So suddenly wind is being generated very cheaply and charged very expensively. And that's where the windfall charges are going to come in if Europe decides.
Yeah, well, I think it's a certainty now that there will be a windfall tax on generators and other energy companies that are making profits that they never even imagined they would make. So that's going to be designed at a European level. There'll be a meeting in the next couple of days.
This would affect people of nuclear, solar, any green energies.
Yeah, well, there would essentially be power generators that don't use gas, essentially. So it will be nuclear, it will be solar, it'll be wind,
hydro.
Yeah. And then also some of those fossil fuel companies, you know, some of those companies around Europe that are taking oil and gas out of the ground and are getting unbelievable prices now for that and generating unbelievable revenues that they never even thought that they would make. You know, they don't need that kind of money to continue to invest. They never even thought they'd make that kind of money. So what we'll do at a European level, and this will work for Ireland as well, is apply a windfall tax. Mm. And we can then recycle that money to bring down bills for households and for families and for businesses. But also what we'll be able to do is do a thing called inframarginal pricing, where the way you calculate the electricity price, which was designed for a different time, has changed. And hopefully that will see electricity prices
because
peak
and
fall.
One would imagine if you had a lot of wind that is cheap by you know, gas price terms, that you could have a mix in an economy. Lots of wind, bit of fossil fuels, therefore the average price is lower than if you were strictly fossil fuels or mostly gas. But that's not the way the electricity market currently works, and perhaps that's where the reform is required.
Yeah, it goes back to the time before the crisis when gas was cheap and renewables were expensive, and that's been turned upside down now. Actually, renewables are inexpensive relative to the price of gas at the moment. So it was designed to encourage investment in renewables and give them a guaranteed price so that investments in renewables were bankable. But, you know, we do need to bear in mind that anytime you change the rules or you change the investment climate, that can sometimes damage investment. And what we don't want is less investment in renewables. If anything, this crisis shows us that we need more investment in renewables, in battery storage, in interconnection, in the grid, all of those things.
Now, there are a number of innovations, I suppose, in the budget. One of them is a tax, a levy on concrete blocks. And this is to help fund the micro redress schemes. But 80 million a year, it would take maybe 40 or 50 years at that rate to pay what's going to have to go out in micro redress.
It'll also take some time to repair and replace all those houses. Won't take that long, but I think everyone understands that fixing those homes in Donegal and Mayo and elsewhere has to be done, and that it's going to take a number of years to do it. And this levy will help at least pay for part of the cost of that. We also have an issue in this city and in cities and towns all over Ireland of defective apartment buildings, and we're going to need to help out people there as well. So unfortunately, these things do have to be paid for, and we felt that the least worst way of doing it was to put a levy on construction.
Well, it certainly is a token that will alert the construction industry perhaps to do their jobs a bit better and in terms of their construction standards. The question of those defective apartment buildings and so on, and the people who supplied the concrete blocks, I'm just wondering, do we need to do something more? Like, if you're responsible as a director of a company for building defective apartments, should you ever be in charge of a construction company ever again?
Well, we have tightened and changed the law since 2014. Most of this dates back to before then. So there have been changes in company law, and there's a much tougher inspection regime now. That does all add
to the cost. No, but historically, you say, you know, developer A is responsible for this block, which is now going to cost either the tenants or the state an enormous amount of money. Why should that person be able to walk away scot-free and make more money again?
Well, you know, I think it's very frustrating for me and for anyone affected by these issues that there haven't been prosecutions. That ultimately is a matter for the Gardaí and for other authorities, the Corporate Enforcement Authority, for example. You know, it is a matter of frustration. I feel that frustration that there are people, or there may have been people, who didn't do this by accident, that actually there was malfeasance involved and there haven't been any consequences. And I hear that and I feel that.
Now, moving on to things that happened yesterday, the announcement that the VAT rate in hospitality is going to go up in February back to the original rate of 13.5%. We know that the restaurants are saying, please, can you do something for us because we use local produce and it'll help food producers and so on. But having spoken to Pascal Donoghue in this studio, he was very upset about the price gouging by the hotel business. Not all of them, but a significant number. And that might have informed the decision to bring it back up to 13.5%.
Well, the decision in the budget is to extend the 9% VAT rate that applies to electricity, gas and hospitality until the end of February, and also to put in place an energy scheme. The main way I think we can help businesses during the winter period is by helping them with the cost of energy. So under the scheme we're introducing, businesses can get up to 10,000 euros a month in subsidies for energy. And I hope that'll help.
You've conceded, though, that even profitable businesses can benefit from this scheme.
Well, that's correct. We don't want to stop businesses making profits. You know, businesses have to break even or turn a profit in order to survive. What this scheme, we hope, will do is stop some of them ending up in a loss-making situation or ending up in a situation where, in order to break even or run a profit, they have to cut people's hours or reduce staff. And that's what we're trying to avoid happening, because this isn't just about protecting businesses. It's also about protecting the workers in those businesses.
You did, in passing, suggest that the 9% might have to be extended beyond February. And that has been interpreted perhaps loosely as saying that you were, might have been contradicting Pascal in a way. What was your intent when you said that, or was it just an off the cuff?
I know, but that would be a misinterpretation. The decision of government is that the VAT rate will stay at 9% until the end of February and will go back up to 13.5% in March. The only thing I would say is that this whole situation, what's been going on for the past year, has been unpredictable, has been rapidly unfolding, and we have to be dynamic in our response and keep things under review, and that's really all I was saying.
Now, one of the things you didn't get, although you kind of flagged your ambition to get it, would be another tax rate of around 30%. What happened to that? How did that founder?
Yeah, so back in June, I asked Minister Donoghue to look at this, consider it. Work was done by him, by the Department of Finance, Revenue Commissioners, very good work. And they indicated that it wouldn't be possible to do it this year, but it would be possible to do it from 2024. So we'll examine that between now and then. But I wouldn't like people to lose sight of the bigger picture here. What my objective is to reduce the number of people who have to pay that higher rate of income tax, because it's very unfair in Ireland that people on middle incomes, even below average incomes, lose half of any pay increase, any overtime they do, any promotion they get between income tax, USC and PRSI. And what you see in this budget is a very significant move where now you can earn up to 40,000 euros as a single person, up to 80,000 euros as a two income couple without hitting that higher rate. And you only pay the higher rate on the income above that. So that's worth over 800 euros. The tax package anyway is worth over 800 euros to a middle income single person, 1,600 euros to a middle income couple. That is a change that's positive, I believe, and I'd like to build on that in future years. Whether we do it by widening the bands or a new rate, that's a matter for discussion, but I do want to,
I mentioned earlier that the concrete levy, I think it'll add anywhere between 1,500 to 3,000 euro to the price of a typical house. But more and more, of course, there are prefabbed houses being built and timber framed houses for insulation purposes. So perhaps the yield will actually fall over the years as building technologies change. So you might see that as a bit of a token. The other token that, well, it might be seen as such is the vacant homes thing, because it's self-assessed. If you spend more than 30 days in the house, it doesn't apply. And you know, what's to stop anyone with the house saying, ah, sure, we went down for a few weekends and we had a couple of weeks in the summer. So that adds up to 31 and a half days. Nothing to be paid.
Well, it will be self-assessed, but it will also be policed by the Revenue Commissioners. And
that's an awful lot of work for probably chicken feed.
I think there's a small number of people now, or a relatively small number of people now, who would willingly make a false declaration to the Revenue Commissioners, because there are real consequences of that, and it's a body with a lot of powers. This is a very clear signal. that if you have a vacant property, if it is habitable, it should be used. It should either be sold or rented out. It's not the only thing we're doing in this area. You know, bear in mind, a lot of vacant properties that people see around the country are actually not habitable at the moment, so they don't fall under the local property tax because they're not habitable.
But then there are properties that are caught up in the Fair Deal scheme.
Yeah.
What is to be done about that? Because most of those were habitable, mm-hmm. and then they're not occupied because people don't want to sell and therefore fall out of Fair Deal.
Well, we have made a change to that already in the last couple of months, that you can rent out a property because the person who lives there previously is in a nursing home and under Fair Deal, and you can rent that out and not lose all of the rental income. So that change has been made. But I think, you know, we need to be sensitive on that issue. You know, often people will have an elderly parent in a nursing home. To rent out a house, you know, you really need to throw out a lot of stuff, and you know, we have to understand the personal sensitivities around that. Sometimes families just won't want to do that, and I understand that.
Now, there was one small thing for landlords yesterday, and that was when they are bringing a property to market, that there's a higher allowance that is offsettable against rent in the preparation of that property, and the time involved has been changed to make that more attractive. But other than that, not much to stop the flood of people exiting, the small landlords, what we all call the mom and pop landlords, or even the accidental landlords who are now looking at property prices improve and getting them out of negative equity. Little to keep them in play.
What's been done is a measure to help with pre-letting expenses for people who are renting.
Well, that's the
property.
One measure.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that is the measure that is in place for landlords in this budget. In previous budgets, there was a change around the mortgage interest and how much you can offset against tax. So, you know, there have been actions in previous budgets that have been designed to encourage landlords to stay in the market. But I acknowledge that's a problem, that the number of landlords who are selling up and moving out of the market is making the availability
situation worse.
See,
there's a perception that the RTB is the tenant's court. It's not a fair court for the people on the supply side, that whatever happens, a tenant behaves badly and eventually, you know, they might be told, yes, the tenant has to leave, but having inflicted all sorts of damage, no compensation is paid to the landlord. A very tedious process. So landlords are saying, you know, the RTB is not fair to us.
I've heard some say that, but, you know, you'll hear it the other way as well. And that's the case with any kind of quasi-judicial body or workplace relations commission, you name it. Some people will not be happy with the decisions that they make. But I think one of the things we can certainly do from a government point of view to increase the supply of rental properties is to really scale up our cost rental programme. That's been talked about for years. It's now a reality. It's where the government, in association with housing bodies, provides properties for rent and does so at a lower market rate. And that's, I think, something we're going to need to scale up and scale up substantially over the next couple of years.
One of the things that you read all the time is the number of new homes. Now, they're either houses mm-hmm. or they're more and more apartments that come on stream. But when you start looking at the apartment blocks as they're finishing and you're waiting to see the signs go up for sale, you know, an auctioneer's billboard and these apartments for sale, one bedroom, two bedroom, you don't see that anymore because pretty much they're all for rent.
There's a lot of built to rent, that is true. One thing, though, I do think is very encouraging, and this was in Minister McGrath's speech there yesterday, and I hadn't heard these numbers. Just in the past year, 15,000 people have bought their first home, and that is the highest in 15 years. You know, that's an encouraging sign. It's not enough, by the way. I'd prefer it to be more like 25 or 30,000. But, you know,
because home ownership is something that was part of the Irish psyche.
Yes,
and you know the expression, good money after bad, when you're paying rent forever and forever and forever. And then the spectre that you're paying lifelong rent, and when you come to retire and your income is cut in half or even further decimated, you don't know what the future brings. You've nowhere to go and you're depending on the state, which doesn't have enough housing to supply to you.
Well, I am a big believer in home ownership. Thankfully, most people in Ireland, 60-70% do own their own home. that's not a reality at the moment for a lot of people in their late 20s and 30s who in previous generations would have owned their own home and now don't. I want to turn the corner on that. That's why we have things like First Home. It's why we have the Help to Buy scheme, which was extended in this budget. And I think we always need to look at new ways to help people to become homeowners. And there are different models. You know, people often talk about the Vienna model. And Vienna's a great city, been there many times, I love it, where people have affordable rents and secure tenure, and that's a good thing. But pretty much everyone in Berlin or Vienna rents for life. I don't think that's the model we actually want in Ireland.
But in those situations, they tend to be income-related.
Yeah.
I mean, even in a place like Kensington in London, I came across a public housing where someone on a very good income was paying a very commercial rate, but they knew when they retired they would stay in that block and the rent would tumble. It's a model that is used all over Europe.
And it's a model that we can use too, both in terms of social housing, which is the amount you pay in rent is income linked, and also this new model of cost rental, a new form of public housing. And for the first time, that's a reality. And I'd like to see that scaled up a lot more. And one thing, you know, you'll see in the budget is funding for 9,000 additional social homes this year, council houses. That is really positive. And bear in mind, that doesn't just benefit people who get to live in those houses. It also benefits everyone because it frees up more properties in the private rental sector for other people to rent and helps bring downward pressure on house prices. So it's very good to see that scaled up. We're building probably more social housing now every year than we've done since the foundation of the state, certainly since the 1970s.
Now, we could be in for a long war in Ukraine, and the standoff with Russia over energy is likely even to go beyond any peace that is made, because Russia has rendered itself a pariah among the nations of the world. So what happens if energy prices remain high? Are we going to have subsidy after subsidy after subsidy? Because these one-off measures might have to become habitual.
Well, that's certainly not the intention or the policy. The intention is that they are one-off and won't have to be repeated. But the situation is very unpredictable, and I acknowledge that. We just don't know how long the war is going to go on for. We don't know when electricity and gas prices are going to fall. And that's why I think we have to, you know, keep monitoring the situation and keep responding to the realities as they occur. And that's what we have done for the past year, and that'll continue.
Now, you have often talked before about the squeezed middle, the people who get up early in the morning. Eamon on my text screen is one of those. I'm a low-paid worker, $32,000 a year. I live in Wicklow, work in Waterford. I spend €450 a month on diesel, as well as €1,100 on rent. I'll be getting a total of €3 extra per week. That's presumably the income tax change, whereas someone on social welfare will be getting an extra €12 a week, as well as a double payment before Christmas and fuel allowance and so on. Eamon wants to know from you, why should he bother?
I think you have to look at the budget package in the round. And one thing Eamon didn't mention there is the new rent tax credit. I think he said he was renting. So the way that works is it is €500 this year and next. So it'll be €1,000 for him in his case. If it's a couple renting, it's double. It's not based on the number of it's not based on the tenancy, it's based on the numbers renting. So if you had three renting, it's €1,500. So, you know, that would be something that he will benefit from. Hopefully, there are other things. I don't know if he's got kids. Certainly, there's a lot in the budget for families, reduced cost of childcare, free school books, making the Susie grant more available to more
people. But you can see that margin, you know, where it might just be when you're on 32K, it just might make more sense to be on social welfare.
I don't think at 32K, no, that would be true.
Getting marginal, you know, and all the time commuting and the petrol and all the rest of it in his situation, it must be getting close to the margin.
I think for some people that is true. But notwithstanding that, in Ireland, we've 2.5 million people at work at the moment, more than ever before. If there wasn't an adequate incentive to work, I don't think that would be the case. And unemployment is pretty much as low as it's ever been. And if you look, for example, at the increase in the minimum wage, and I appreciate that's going to be difficult for some employers to pay, that works out an extra €32 a week. Somebody on social welfare won't be getting an increase of €32 a week. Mm. It's much less than that. So the incentive to work is there, and I think it is strong.
Peter wants to know, whatever about using gas or electricity for heating, what about the people who have oil heating?
Yeah, that's a big problem. And a lot of people in Ireland, particularly in rural areas, but also in urban areas, use oil. One small thing in the budget, and it is only small, is that the NORA levy is being reduced by 2 cents per litre. So that will bring down the cost of home heating oil.
Principle there was you want to keep going with the carbon tax because that's a tax for the future to try and make people go green. But in order for it to have zero effect this time, the NORA tax was reduced. I mean, that's what you did. It has, by the way, an effect on heating oil. But the principle was that the price at the pump, diesel and petrol, should not be affected by the carbon tax.
Well, that is the principle because prices at the pump are so high. But it wasn't the only thing we agreed. We've agreed to hypothecate the money from the carbon tax, and Mr. Ryan will bring in legislation in that regard quite soon. So as people will know, the money collected from the carbon tax doesn't just go into the central pot. It goes into a dedicated fund to pay for things like the fuel allowance, to pay for green schemes for farmers, to pay for retrofit, to pay for green and environmental programs. So we have protected the integrity of the carbon tax. The revenues going into that fund will continue to rise, and that's money that we reinvest in climate action, essentially, and that's been protected.
I'm a landlord with a number of properties, says this texter. I sold three of them over the past year. I waited with great anticipation to see what the budget would bring. The refurbishment allowance in the budget is risible. It's now very clear to me that the government has no understanding of the issues, the RTB, the rising costs, the ridiculous rate of tax, cash flow, etc., which affect landlords. I'm now selling two more properties. It's clear that the government will do nothing for private landlords, so I'll get out while I can.
That's worrying. There are two sides to that story, of course. You know, those properties will be sold. They may well be sold to somebody else who rents them out. They may well be sold to somebody who lives in them, and it becomes the home that they wanted to buy. So, you know, there are always two aspects of that. The main thing we need to do is to make sure that we have an increased supply of all forms of housing, whether it's social housing, whether it's housing for people to buy in particular, whether it's rental properties. And one thing that you'll see announced quite recently, which I'm a big fan of, is this new grant for people to bring a derelict property back into use between 30 and 50,000. And I think that can put a lot of life into towns and villages around the country, and something I hope people will consider.
One of the instruments used was the rent pressure zones to try and keep rents down. It's had a strange effect, though, because new people coming into the rental business, like the big funds and so on, have put rents up so high because they think we'll only get 2% for the next whatever. So we're going to start off high. So if we only get 2%, we're still getting a very fat rent. These tools that the government uses, like the rent pressure zones, sometimes I wonder, is there not a better way? For example, you're talking about vacant homes being inspected by the revenue, which is a tedious business. But should not every apartment, every house that is up for rent be graded? Where it is, square footage, condition, give it A, B or C, and the rent capped according to its rating. That would be a sensible way of controlling rents and keeping the cowboys out of the market because they wouldn't get a return for a rubbish property. Now, it would be tedious.
And it would be more regulation and more price controls. And I heard,
but it would be more targeted, more specific. You know, when you go into a hotel in France or something, it's on the wall how much they're allowed to charge. The maximum, they might charge you less, but they won't charge you more because the government or the local authority has said, this is the rate, this is the grading, this is all you can do.
Yeah, you know, generally speaking, any form of price regulation results in reduced supply. And that's something that we have to bear in mind. The rent controls we have at the moment mean that for the vast majority of people who are renting in Ireland, the landlord can't put up the rent by more than 2% a year. That has protected a lot of people, but it has had other consequences. No. And, you know, it is one of the reasons why properties, when they're put on the market for the first time for rent, as you mentioned, are highballed. And the rents are higher than maybe they would be because the landlord is concerned that they'll never be able to put up the rent. So they highball the price, and it does teach us that lesson that with any law, there's also the law of unintended consequences.
This is a charge from one of the texters. Why did the government chicken out of doing something appropriate to encourage landlords to feel it's worth the huge risk of staying in the rental market? Literally, watch the exodus. Basically, the government was afraid of Sinn Féin because the criticism would have come down on your heads if you gave landlords any kind of a break.
We're not afraid of criticism from Sinn Féin. No matter what we do, we'll get criticisms. We did want to do something for renters, and that's there with the rent credit, which is a change in policy, but I think the right one given how high rents are, and particularly what younger people have to pay to rent. When it comes to landlords, we did look at a number of options. To do something significant is extremely expensive. I know a lot of people who are landlords will say that they have to pay quite high income tax on their rental income. That's true. Most landlords will be paying that higher rate. They'd be earning more than
40,000. Because you haven't done anything about the real estate investment trusts, the REITs, yet. There's a promise that, that they'll be, you know, that some sort of alignment might take place between the small landlord and the big guy.
Well, certainly Minister Donoghue indicated in his speech that he's still examining that. We are seeing a fall off in investment by those investment firms, by those institutional investors. And that's a matter of concern as well, because a lot of the apartments that have been built were only built because they were funded by those institutional investors.
But some of them whistled in and bought up apartment blocks that were already being built by developers, and suddenly a big fund came in and scooped it up, not having done any of the development work or the planning work or anything like that. They just came in with their cash and bought them and put them on the rental market.
That happened too, and certainly what I'd like to see is the planning system being used more frequently to say that you know, some blocks have to be for individual sale and others fine can be bought up by an institutional investor. So say there's a new development, you might have five blocks, you know, it makes sense to me that you you would set aside one or two for individual purposes at least.
As a fellow medic, does Leo share the despair of his former colleagues at the announcement of even more work for GPs who have struggled throughout the pandemic? And we're talking about the extra people with the GP card. The GPs are saying, well, where are we going to get the time if this results in a lot more visitations?
I think it's important that we do this in the right way. We've already seen the extension of affordable healthcare to a lot more people. Ireland is unusual in that people pay a lot of out-of-pocket expenses for healthcare, at least unusual in a European scenario. We do have free GP care for under sixes. That was extended to carers, extended to children with cancer. Patients are terminally ill. There's the free contraception, which is now being extended. Hospital charges for children were abolished recently. We're going to do the same now for adults. So this is all part of the Sláinte Care programme of reform, that we reduce the out-of-pocket cost of healthcare. And there will, of course, be engagement with GPs about this. And we understand that they will need more resources, need more practice nurses, need more finance for their practices. And we've just, when it comes to GP training, for example, we've gone up from training 150 a year to 250 a year. But there will be engagement with the IMO about how we can do this and do it right so that they're not overwhelmed.
A number of people making the point that they don't need all the money that they got. They get the tax and so on, but they didn't need all the other giveaways because they have a good income. Was it not possible to target things a bit better to give to people with disabilities and people who need it?
Well, we did a mix of targeted measures and universal ones. And if you look at the analysis, not my view, done by the Department of Finance, those on the lowest incomes are seeing about a 6% increase in their disposable income. Those in the middle, about 3%. And the top 10%, the best off, less than 2%. So this is, in the round, a progressive
budget. Percentages belie the reality of money in your pocket. That's, I mean, even when trade unions negotiate a 4% increase, the people at the top get a lot of money, people at the bottom get very little. And I've always wondered about the wisdom of trade unions doing that for their members. Finally, I should ask you, Taoiseach, soon to be Taoiseach, how are you preparing?
I'm focusing on the job that I have at the moment. I'm Taoiseach, I'm leader of my party, I'm Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment. My particular focus in the moment is protecting businesses and protecting jobs during this inflation crisis. We've more people at work in Ireland than ever before. I want that to stay the case and protect
employment.
Okay,
but you will move to the office of Taoiseach, and you posited the notion that Pascal Donoghue, who will move out of finance to make way for Michael McGrath, could retain his job as president of the Eurogroup. Have you accepted that that's not going to be the case?
There will be a new cabinet in December, and I think the right time to talk about those things is then. We'll cross those bridges when we come to them. The focus now...
But have you capitulated on the Eurogroup?
Focus now, the government is in on the job at hand, and that's the cost of living crisis, helping people through what will be a difficult winter. And my focus is very much on the job that I have at hand, which is to help businesses to get through this difficult period and to continue to generate the revenues that we need to do everything else.
Tánaiste, Leo Bradker, thank you very much for joining us in the studio.
Very good.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.